We are off and running. Kind of just setting things up for a second so that I can open the book and get to reading. It's Tuesday, January 25th, I think. 24th, 25th, 25th. It's one of those days. How are we doing? Good morning. We are in Exodus chapter 35. And trying to just get through. I think this only goes to 40 chapters. So I'm hoping to try and get through Exodus. I have a real problem with Exodus. Like, I have slowed down unbelievably. Just all in general with all of this. It's in the fridge. That's my daughter asking for some milk. She doesn't eat solid food. She's autistic. She basically drinks fruit and vegetable smoothies all day long. I knew she was going to want one. Every time I start doing this, she needs 10 things, so I figured I'd just make it right off the bat before I even open the book. Okay, chapter 35. And Moses assembled all the congregation of the sons of Israel and said to them, "These are the words which Jehovah has commanded to do them. Work may be done 6 days, and on the seventh day it shall be holy to you, a Sabbath of rest to Jehovah. Everyone doing work in it shall be put to death." Oh my God. That's no good. The Sabbath, I believe, is Saturday. And for some crazy reason, all our churches, do things on a Sunday, and which basically makes it okay to work or do whatever you want on Saturday, I suppose. Even though there is videos of the Pope in Italy, telling a whole congregation. In some crazy nice building, look like an award show. That's how nice the churches they're doing over there are, and everyone's dressed to the hilt. I mean, just crazy for going to church. But he tells everyone that Mary is dead, and that the Sabbath is on Saturday. Like, what are you guys doing here today? You know what I mean? And when he's done, I mean, he just says all this stuff, and then he just cuts his feed. And the guy that's there, who's the on-site preacher, or priest or whatever they call him over there, bishop, God knows what it was, but he freaks out. I don't know why he would say that. You could look up the video. It's very interesting. But you just get put to death. You know how many Saturdays I've worked? I try not to do Saturday. I'm at the point now where I try not to even cook on a Saturday, and I fail at that. I try to rationalize the idea, look, if this is frozen, if I just heat it up, I'm not really cooking it. It's already been cooked. I'm just putting warmer heat to it. But I think the action of doing anything to prepare anything is probably what they're talking about. This is why I need to get, further into the King James Bible, where Jesus comes on the scene, because a lot of what's happening in this Holy Bible, this first Bible that we're going through here, doesn't seem to be the same in the once Jesus comes. My guess is people not just getting put to death immediately on Saturday is going to be one of them, because that's rough. "You shall be put to death. You shall not kindle a fire in all your dwellings on the day of Sabbath." Well, okay, there you go. that covers the not heating up frozen food. It doesn't matter if you didn't manufacture or if it's pre-cooked. You can't even put heat to it. And that's kind of what I was thinking, too. That made sense in my head, but there it is right there. "You shall not kindle a fire," so don't turn on your stove. Don't start your microwave. Anything that's going to heat something would not be good. It does make me wonder, though. "You shall not kindle a fire in all your dwellings on the day of the Sabbath." So in the middle of the winter, you couldn't heat your place. Well, now, actually, this goes back to some old technology, too, doesn't it? You look at the old World's Fairs, like Chicago and all these places. They have in the Chicago World's Fair, way back in the day, okay? There was more electricity at that fair than all of New York at the time. And when you look at pictures of the place, there's no above ground wiring. There's nothing you can see that would explain how we, understand electricity and things to work today, to explain how this place was lit up. Like, I mean, it is glowing. You watch the old videos, the amount of lights going on there, the amount of illumination is unbelievable. And it's only right to think that they were doing something else. I don't know if they had a way of capturing gases inside the bulbs, and it was just gases that, maybe the daylight would interact with them at night, they would glow from it, kind of like we have the little solar lights that work like that now. I don't know if there's gases that do that or what it is that was actually giving off that effect or causing that, but they certainly were not using electricity in the sense that we use it today. I mean, even the, you know, the wires that we put underground or above ground are covered in like a rubber or a plastic, you know, to protect them from grounding out or whatever in the ground. And they didn't have plastic back then. There was no plastic. It wasn't invented yet. There was no rubber. None of that stuff was there. So how were they powering all of those lights? What was going on? Maybe, and you know, the old fireplaces and buildings, especially in older, the older buildings you get, some of them didn't actually even have chimneys. Those are afterthoughts. But the fireplace was still there with no evidence of ever having one fire burned in it. So what was that? What was going on with that? Was that heating the home? Was there a way to heat the home that didn't need fire? Were these people already advanced beyond, you know, the caveman sense of putting a fire in the middle of your teepee or cave and warming yourself? Like, we even do it today. There's people with stoves inside their homes. Was there a different way? Was there a better way? I assume, which, you know, can, let's say I presume that there was. All right. And Moses said to all the congregation of the sons of Israel, saying, "This is the thing which Jehovah commanded, saying, take from among you an offering to Jehovah. Everyone willing of heart shall bring it, the offering of Jehovah, gold and silver and bronze, and blue and purple and crimson, and bleached linen and goat's hair, and ram's skin dyed red." Why dyed red? "And dugong skins." I'm a dugong. That's probably an animal we even know today, just a different word for it. And acacia wood, and oil for the light. So they were using oil? Oil for the light. At this, yeah, oil right here, it straight out says that. So maybe they had a way of burning oil for fires, too, to, you wouldn't need wood to kindle? I don't know. Then why would you be using, if you could do that, why would you be using it to cook? We have gas stoves, right? I mean, anyway. "And oil for the light, and spices for the oil of anointing, and for the incense of perfumes, and onyx stones, and stones of settings, for the ephod, and for the breastplate. And every wise-hearted one among you, let them come and make all which Jehovah has commanded. The tabernacle," yeah, the tabernacle, "its tent, and its cover, its hooks, its boards, its bars, its pillars, and its sockets, the ark and its poles, the mercy seat and the veil of the covering, the table and its poles, and all its vessels, and the bread of the presence," and the bread of the presence, yeah, presence, "and the lampstand of the light, and its vessels, and its lamps, and the oil of the light, and the incense altar and its poles, and the oil of anointing, and the incense of perfumes, and the hanging of the door, at the door of the tabernacle, the altar of burnt offering, and its bronze grating, its poles, and all its vessels, the laver and its base, the hangings of the court, its pillars, and its sockets, and the hanging for the gate of the court, the pins of the tabernacle, and the pins of the court, and their cords, the woven garments to minister in the holy place, the holy garments for Aaron, the priest, and the garments for his son to minister as priests." Okay, so I'm going to take what all that stuff about the Sabbath, what he's saying or what's going on in this chapter is relevant to doing this, what we've been talking about in the last few chapters, which is building this Ark of the Covenant, I think? Yeah, I think, I mean... Wow, and what a thorough reading of what you're doing, right? It's almost like instruction, you know, for an IKEA thing, just put right there, and it's like they, even the pins, they mention even the pins. That's crazy. All right, we gotta pause. My daughter is using the bathroom, and it's all done. All right, second attempt to come back. The headphones I was using just a second ago completely crapped out on me, and stopped working in like 1 year. I have no idea what just happened there. It was very weird. And my daughter is getting restless, so she will probably be in here to bother me any moment. In here, I mean my living room, but like I'm hidden away somewhere. All right. So, to the ministers as priests. And the congregation of the sons of Israel went out from Moses. And they came, everyone whose heart was lifted up, and everyone whose spirit impelled them. Impelled them. They brought the offering of Jehovah for the work of the tabernacle, of the congregation, and for all its service, and for the holy garments. And the men came in together with the women, everyone willing of heart. They brought in bracelets, and nose rings, and jewels, every gold article, and everyone who waved a wave offering to Jehovah. And everyone with whom blue was found, and purple, and crimson, and bleached linen, and goat's hair, and ram's skins dyed red, and dagong skins, they brought. Nose rings. They mentioned nose rings. That's crazy. So, nose rings were a thing. Even back then. Huh. I mean, I guess you see it, like, in that movie 300, and a lot of the times when they're depicting what they're calling barbarians or whatever, you know, they're usually bastardizing our history, badly. But it's common to see nose piercings within those people, you know? That dude, I think of the dude in 300 that showed up with the huge army. That was the big, I can't even remember the guys, what they called him in the thing. But I believe he had, like, nose piercings. Just weird. Why you would think, even back then, like, hey, I got a nose. I got some gold. How does that come to be? It's just me, but I think that's weird. That's just me. Okay. Go red hair, dagong skins, they brought. Is that where we just were? Yep. Everyone rising up with an offering of silver and bronze, they brought the offering of Jehovah. And everyone with whom was found acacia wood for any wood work, for any work of the service, they brought. And every wise-hearted woman spun with her hands, and they brought spun yarn, blue and purple and crimson and bleached linen. And all the women whose hearts were lifted up into wisdom spun the goat's hair. And the leaders brought the onyx stones. The leaders, yeah. And stones for the setting, for the ephod, and for the breastplate. And the spice and the oil for light, and for the anointing oil, and for incense of the perfumes, and for the incense of the perfumes. And every man and woman whose hearts impelled them to bring for all the work which Jehovah commanded to be done by the hand of Moses, the son of Israel, brought a willing offering to Jehovah. Man, this book is heavy. I mean, it is. It's leather bound. It's not heavy like at first, but after you've been holding it for, I should be in a position where I don't have to hold it. I should be way more relaxed, but here we are, me holding it, and after minutes of doing that, it does feel a little uncomfortable. Okay. And Moses said to the sons of Israel, "See, Jehovah has called by name, Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Judah. And he has filled with him the Spirit of God in wisdom, in intelligence, and in knowledge, and in all the workmanship, and to devise designs, to work in gold, and in silver, and in bronze, and in cuttings of stones for finishing, and in carving of wood, to work in all workmanship of design." You know, I got a feeling that back then, gold wasn't quite as valued as we think it is. Because gold was in everything. I think it was an abundant resource, and I think everybody had it. I think it worked really good for a lot of reasons. I think it was good for, you know, people. I think gold interacts with us very well. But I don't think it was a sign of wealth. I think that's been altered. I think that's part of what has happened. I mean, there's some weird stuff going on around us. This whole narrative of the Great Reset, right? And we look at these, all these people studying these past things, that, you know, Tartarians, the mud floods, the just all these civilizations, the flood. I mean, just old civilizations that seem to have been here long before we were told they were here, and maybe even sooner, you know, maybe we're closer, maybe the timelines, you know, there's a lot of speculation that it's off by 1,000 years, that this all really started around 1850 from the old world. So, but I wonder if there's not like some common reset that happens, if there's not something, you know, cyclical that happens every, say, 200 years, that some group figured out, and they know, and they now kind of, as soon as it happens, they take control of the population, and they keep us dumb, so we aren't aware of it, and we don't know, it's kind of like, we don't seem to understand this anymore, and as those events come, they do what they're doing now. Like, think of 1908, when the, maybe it's every 100 years, for that matter, things are happening a lot faster than I think we're giving credit to, but that was when the Spanish flu happened, and there was a huge wipeout. I mean, every world war, potentially, was actually some kind of reset event. You know what I mean? And maybe there's some cycle that creates this, and it was meant to happen so that there was always an opportunity to bring, you know, bring God back forth, or to stop, you know, the evil that's happening to an extent, you know. And we're coming up on that event now, and these elites around us, they're the only ones that really know about it. So they've taken control of everything, and every time this happens, they know where to go, they know how to hide, they know how to survive it, and they know how you won't survive it, and that's where they leave us, right? I don't know, it's hard to say, you know, the ley line things, all that stuff's really weird. We seem to build our cities right in them. And if they're part of what's going to destroy things or what happens, then building all your cities on top of them, that's a good way to wipe out the people every time. And just look at all these old structures and buildings, and people even think the mountains are just melted buildings from the time of the giants, you know? Like, it's weird. It is weird. I mean, I live in Washington State, and one of our mountain ranges that almost gets no credit because it doesn't have Mount St. Helens and it doesn't have Mount Rainier in it is the Olympic Mountains. They're the Olympics. So you think about the Greek gods, then Zeus lived up, you know, on Mount Olympia, or up in Olympic, or in the Olympics or whatever, you know what I mean? Even the Olympics are called the Olympics. Is there another mountain range on Earth that's named after the Olympics? Because we have one here, and it is a crazy mountain range compared to the Cascades. There are areas like in Oregon. If you are in eastern Washington and you start, I think it's 97, you start heading south down it, and you shoot down through Oregon, it's going to take you towards Bend. If you veer east, just before you get to Bend, like you're heading to Donner Lake, when you get off on that highway about an hour in, you get to this weird spot, elevation-wise. I might have mentioned this on this podcast before, but you can see all of the West Coast from there. All of it. You can see the entire Cascade Mountain Range. You can see how it goes up into Canada and spreads out. You can see in Washington State, you can count down Mount Baker, Mount Rainier, Mount St. Helens, Mount Adams, right down to Mount Hood. You can count every mountain, point them all out, all the way down to Mount Shasta, which is at the end and a little off to the, from your viewpoint looking out to the west. It's a little closer to you, so it's a little east of that line. And then you can see the damn Gulf of Mexico. You can see where California curves, comes back in, and look at the sun, you can see more of the Pacific than you would imagine, and literally the Gulf of Mexico. And the day that we were there staring at this, I don't know why I didn't make a video of it. I was just in such shock. I need to go back there really bad and film this so it can be seen. There's people live around there. I don't know why they're not posting it. It's shocking just to look at. It hurts the curvature narrative if you're absolutely dead set on the idea that we live on a ball. You have to adhere to the mileage and the curvature that has been set forth by the science that is telling you that you live on a ball, and that puts the Earth at 25,000 miles around, period. And it puts the rate of curvature at 8 inches or something per mile or something squared, something like that. You can look it up, you know what I mean? It gets, the farther you go, the more drastic the drop becomes, the curvature will become, you know what I mean? Because it's falling away from you faster, right? Think of a basketball when you're sitting on top of it. If you make a straight line off of it, the curvature below you drops away quicker and quicker and quicker until it's just gone. You're out away from the ball and on nothing, right? So when you're looking at this and you can see flatland and you can see the entire Cascade Mountain Range, and like I said, I'm from Washington State. I'm used to the idea that it runs down into California, okay? But to see it go north and look at it, it spreads out. Like, it literally gets way wider. That mountain range is way thicker and way denser in Canada than it is in Washington. Way bigger. And to see that is just mind-bending. I would love to be back there in that exact same spot, like a P900 or something, where I could zoom in on those mountains up in Canada and see what's up, what can I see farther? You know what I mean? I was out there on a very clear day. In fact, that where the sun was located over the Earth, it was putting a hot spot in the Gulf of Mexico, which is what really pointed that out to me. I was like, oh my gosh, you can see that little, you know, landmass of California that dangles down there for that Gulf. It was weird. It really hurt my brain to look at. So it was different. I've gone way off track here. Dang it. Where was I? Yeah, here we are. These are the son of Ur, tribes in good wisdom. Carving to work with, and all manship and design. That doesn't sound right. The sons of Ur are probably offerings to Jehovah. Is that where I was? All the women whose hearts were lifted. Sorry, I gotta find my spot here. I went way off track and lost where I was. Done by the hand of Moses, the sons of Israel brought a willing offering, and Moses said to the sons of Israel, Seijah, Bezalel, son of Uri. We're just gonna start back in his, right after the tribe of Judah. And he has filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom, intelligence, and in knowledge, and in all the workmanship, and to devise designs to work in gold, yeah, okay, and in silver and in bronze, and in the cuttings of stones for finishing, and in the carving of wood, to work in all workmanship of design. And that's where I think I went way off track with mentioning that gold seems to be used a lot in a lot of things. And you wouldn't think, I mean, the Bible tells you that rich men won't go to heaven, so they clearly did not look at gold as a measure of wealth. That wouldn't make sense to be making those statements and to be also asking for gold, right? No rich man will go to heaven. Now bring me all your gold and silver. It doesn't make sense. So I don't think that's what it was being used for. I mean, completely wrong. I have no idea. Who knows if they even had a currency back then? If there was a currency, was it needed? Was each individual empowered enough to do about by themselves what they needed, and they didn't really need to barter or deal with anybody else? I mean, I don't know. I think we were stronger creatures back then, but I don't know. And he has put in his heart to teach. He and Aholiab, Aholiab, he and Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach, oh boy, Ahisamach, I don't know how to pronounce that, Ahisamach. So we got Aholiab, the son of Ahisamach, of the tribe of Dan, of course. They all come from the tribe of Dan. Dan named his people outrageously. I will be the only name you can pronounce in this tribe. He has filled them with the wisdom of heart to do every work of a smith and an artisan and an embroiderer in blue and in purple and in crimson and in bleached linen and a weaver, doers of every work and devisers of designs. Okay, chapter 36. Can I get to 37 before? Ooh, it's a ways. This is a longer chapter than most of them, so I'm just going to try and just barrel through this. Stay with me. And Bezalel and Aholiab shall work with everyone wise of heart to whom Jehovah has given wisdom and intelligence, to know how to do work, to know how to do every work of the service in the holy place concerning all which Jehovah has commanded. And Moses called to Bezalel and to Aholiab, and to everyone wise of heart, to whom Jehovah had given a heart of wisdom, everyone whose heart had lifted him up to come near the work to do it. And they took every offering before Moses, which the sons of Israel had brought for the work of the service in the holy place, to do it. And they brought to him still more willing offerings morning by morning. And all the wise men came, those doing every kind of work for the holy place, each one from his work they were doing. And they spoke to Moses, saying, the people are bringing more than enough for the service of the work that Jehovah commanded to do it. And Moses commanded, and they caused it to be voiced. And Moses commanded, and they caused it to be voiced in the camp, saying, let neither man nor woman make any more offering for the holy place. And the people were held back from bringing. And the property was sufficient for all the work to do it. And it was too much. So they made more than they needed. Well, that's good. That's good. I mean, that shows an abundance of faith, right? You can't not like that. And every wise-hearted one among the doers of the work of the tabernacle made 10 curtains, twined bleached linen, in blue and purple and crimson. He made them with cherubs, the work of an artisan. The length of one curtain was 28 by the cubit, and the width was 4 by the cubit. The one curtain was the same measure for all the curtains. And he joined 5 curtains, one to another. And he joined 5 curtains, one to another. And he made loops of blue on the edge of the one curtain, from the end to the juncture. So he did at the edge of the last curtain at the second juncture. He made 50 loops on one curtain, and he made 50 loops on the end of the curtain which was at the second juncture. The loops corresponded one with another. And he made 50 hooks of gold, and he joined the curtains by the hooks, one to another, and the tabernacle became one. And he made curtains of goat's hair for a tent over the tabernacle. He made them 11 curtains. The length of one curtain was 30 by the cubit. No. Wait. Go. And he made curtains of goat's hair to a tent over the tabernacle. He made them 11 curtains. The length of one curtain was 30 by the cubit, and 4 cubits by the width of one curtain. Sorry, my daughter's begging for lollipops. Hold on. All right, back again. Hoping to get through this. That was my daughter losing her mind over a lollipop. It's not even noon. She hadn't even brushed her teeth this morning. Not a chance she's getting a lollipop. Good God. The fact that she would even throw a fit about it this early in the day, when she's never gotten one this early, is astonishing. Okay, I'm not exactly sure. If you hear her whining in the background, I apologize, but she's not getting a lollipop, so we're just going to deal with that. And so I'm just going to start back off on verse 14 in chapter 36, because I'm not exactly sure. Wait a minute. Bronze to join the tent to unite one. We're just going to start on 14 again. And he made curtains of goat's hair for the tent over the tabernacle. He made them 11 curtains. The length of one curtain was 30 by the cubit, and 4 cubits the width of one curtain. So let me read that again. The length of the one curtain was 30 by the cubit, and 4 cubits the width of one curtain, one measure to the 11 curtains. And he joined 5 curtains separately, and the 6 curtains separately. And he made 50 loops on the edge of the last curtain at the juncture, and he made 50 loops on the edge of the curtain that joined the second. And he made 50 hooks of bronze to join the tent to unite it in one. And he made a cover for the tent of ram skins dyed red, and a cover of dugong, skins from above. Dugong. I know I looked that up. I can't remember what it is, though. It's like a bowl or something? I don't remember. look it up. It's just weird that they call it. Dugong on here is spelled D-U-G-O-O-N-G. So, dugong. Just weird. And he made the boards for the tabernacle, standing planks of acacia wood. Acacia wood. Is that a strong wood? I don't know why, but in my mind it seems like a balsa wood or something, like a weaker wood, but I would think it's not if they're using it for this. You would hope it's not. I mean, jeez, you would think it's a lasting wood, right? I mean, I don't know. I need to look up acacia wood. The length of the board was 10 cubits, and a cubit and a half was the width of the one board. Guy said that weird. The length of the board was 10 cubits, and a cubit and a half was the width of the one board. Yeah. The one board was connected by two pins, one to another. So he did to all the boards of the tabernacle. That by two pins, it's weird that the by in here is in a different font. Why would that be? That's the first time I've seen that. The font's not too different as to say that the letters are actually leaning to the right, which is weird. Because I don't see that anywhere else. Huh. Weird. Okay, whatever. Two pins. One to another, so he did all the boards of the tabernacle. And he made the boards for the tabernacle, 20 boards for the south side southward. And he made 40 sockets of silver under the 20 boards, 2 sockets under the one board for its 2 pins. And for the second side of the tabernacle, to the north side, he made 20 boards. And there are 40 silver sockets, 2 sockets under the one board, and 2 sockets under the other board. And he made 6 boards for the sides of the tabernacle westward. And we're flipping page. Which is good, because we're actually getting through this chapter a little quicker. And he made 2 boards for and he made 2 boards for the corners of the tabernacle, in the sides, and they were double from below. I'm going to just guess that's only supposed to be one from. One of them typos. And they were double from below, and in like manner, they were complete to its top, to the first ring. So he did to both of them for the 2 corners. And there were 8 boards. And there were silver sockets, 16 sockets, 2 sockets, and 2 sockets under the one board. And he made bars of acacia wood, 5 to the boards of the second side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars to the boards of the sides of the tabernacle westward. Oh, and he made bars of acacia wood, 5 to the boards of the second side of the tabernacle, and 5 bars to the boards of the sides of the tabernacle westward. And he made the middle bar to go through the middle of the boards from end to end. And he overlaid the boards with gold. And he made the rings gold, housing for the poles,
and he overlaid the bars with gold. I guess I don't know what that means. Is that decorative? Like little pillars around the thing? I don't know. My brain's not picturing that properly. And he made a veil of blue and purple and crimson and twined bleached linen. He made it the work of an artisan with cherubs. And he made four pillars of acacia for it. And he overlaid them with gold, their nails gold. And he cast four sockets of silver for them. And he made a hanging for the door of the tabernacle, blue and purple and crimson, and twined bleached linen, the work of an embroiderer, and its five pillars and their nails, and he overlaid their tops and their bands with gold, and their five sockets were of bronze. Huh. I tell you what, it's getting very hard to picture, like, the intricacies of what's going on here, but just based on what they're using, this thing sounds gorgeous, right? Like, this sounds like a hardcore piece of workmanship. My goodness. My goodness. All right, that leaves 37, 38, 39, and 40. And 40 will be the last one. And then we'll be into Leviticus. The book of Leviticus. I can't wait to get there. I'm really excited to move into like these different sections of the book. The Exodus was long. Genesis was long. They both do so much explaining that we're not just getting like straightforward storytelling. And sometimes when we do, it's so overtold. Like, they're so exact about what they're saying, right down to what people were wearing, you know, even what they had in their noses, you know, the piercings that they don't just say, oh, he had rings in his nose. They were gold of this and, you know, cast by this, made by a smith. And it's just weird how detailed everything is. Not weird, just unusual. Like, they really went out of their way to make sure that you knew exactly what they were saying here. And it's not that it's like, none of this is reading like Shakespeare. It's not hard to understand. The only thing that's hard to understand is why and what they're doing with all this. That, like, I mean, some of the terminology just doesn't quite translate to today. At least not for me, not in the English that I speak. And it just makes it's weird to me to try and, you know, it's hard, I should say, for me to try and visualize what we're talking about here, this Ark of the Covenant. And I mean, I just got a thorough description of it, and I know that I've seen on movies or different things, you know, depictions of what they think it would be, but based on what this thing is describing with all this gold, the inlet, just, man, I don't think I've seen anything quite that intricate on any movie. Like, this is hardcore. It makes me want to watch, like, Ben-Hur, some of the older movies where they did a really good job with their sets and stuff. They really went out of their way. Like the Ten Commandments or something. I've never seen that, but I've heard that it's the set designs and some of the things they have going on are just crazy, and they tried to stay pretty close to what the Bible was describing. You know, that's all to say, that depends on what Bible you're using, because they're all different, right? Mine, this one reads, this is an interlinear, and it reads so much different than my Catholic Bible. My Catholic Bible actually reads like a child's book. Like, I could read chapters of that to you, and it is so simple to read compared to this, but it's not quite as detailed, and it smooths over things that when you read and hear, you're like, wait a minute, that's not the same. That's not the same. You know what I mean? This was not well translated. It's like a fiction writer went over it all and made it sound easy and simple and kinder. For kids, like, you lose a lot of what's happening in this book. I mean, don't get me wrong, there's still appalling things in the Holy Bible of the Catholic version. It's just the way it reads. It's so much simpler and easier and just dumbed down compared to what I'm looking at here. It's neat. It's neat. It makes me appreciate this book way more. We're going to stop there. We're on 37 when we come back. We're three chapters to the end. And, wait a minute, are we on 37? Yeah, we went to 37. Yeah, okay. Even I'm, like, confused. Wait a minute, where was I? I've only done two chapters. I've walked to 37. Maybe let's just go to 38. Let's see if we can rock this out. Chapter 37. And Bezalel made the ark of the acacia wood, 2 cubits and a half long, and 1.5 cubits wide, and 1.5 cubits high. And he overlaid it with pure gold inside and outside. And he made it for it a wreath. That's one of those. And he made for it a wreath of gold all around. and he cast 4 rings of gold for it, on its 4 feet, 2 rings on its one side and 2 rings on its second side. And he made poles of acacia wood, and he overlaid them with gold. And he put the poles into the rings on the sides of the ark to carry the ark. And he made a mercy seat of pure gold, 2 cubits and a half long and 1.5 cubits wide. And he made 2 cherubs of gold, and he made them of beaten work. So he blacksmithed them. From the 2 ends of the mercy seat, 1 cherub here at one end and 1 cherub there at the other end. He made the cherubs from the mercy seat from its 2 ends. And the cherubs were spreading out their wings above, covering the mercy seat with their wings, with their faces, with, whoa, covering the mercy seat with their wings, their faces with their faces, each toward its brother, towards the mercy seat were the faces of the cherubs. And he made the table of planks of acacia, 2 cubits long and 1 cubit wide and 1.5 cubits high. And he overlaid it with pure gold. And he made it, and he made for it a wreath of gold all around. And he made for it a border of a hand's breadth all around. And he made a wreath of gold for its border all around. And he cast 4 rings of gold for it. And he put the rings on the 4 corners, which were to its 4 feet. The rings were near the border, the housings for the poles, to carry the table. And he made the poles of acacia wood. And he overlaid them with gold, to lift up the table. And he made the vessels which were on the table, its platters, and its bowls, and its sacrificial cups, and its pitchers by which is made a drink offering with pure gold. That sacrificial cup thing, that always blows me away. Sacrificial cup? Are you drinking blood out of the cup? What are we doing with the cup here? If it's sacrificial, then it's got to be offering a sacrifice, and it's in a cup. And he made the lampstand of pure gold. He made the lampstand of beaten work. Its side and its branch, its calyxes, its knobs, and its blossoms were from it. And 6 branches went out from its sides, 3 branches on the lampstand from one side, and 3 branches of the lampstand from its second side. 3 almond-like bowls were on the one branch, with knob and blossom, and 3 almond-like bowls on the one branch with knob and blossom. So for the 6 branches, those going out from the lampstand. Okay, so they all had almond-shaped bowls on them, which is weird. And on the lampstand were 4 almond-like bowls, its knobs, and its blossoms. And a knob was under its 2 branches. And a knob under its 2 branches. And knob under its 2 branches. It literally just said that 3 times. Account to the 6 branches, those going out from it. The knobs and the branches of it were 1 beaten work of pure gold. And 1 beaten work? All those knobs are just all beaten from 1 piece. Wow. Is that what that's saying, really? The knobs and the branches of it were 1 beaten work of pure gold. That's insane. I mean, that is a blacksmith. Or metallurgist, or whatever you call it. Nowadays, we would have to pour that into a mold. I'm not sure we have anyone that could... Well, maybe there is. There's some people doing some pretty cool stuff out there. Let me not undermine their creativity and their ability. Yeah. So it were 1 beaten work of pure gold. And he made its 7 lamps and its snuffers. Huh. And its pans of pure gold. He made it of a talent of pure gold in all its vessels. That's really cool, actually. And he made the altar of incense of acacia wood, its length 1 cubit and its width 1 cubit, square. And its height was 2 cubits. Its homs were of it. Homs. Is it homs or horns? I think that's horns. Its horns were of it. Yeah, because I don't know what a hom is, and it looks like horns. Its height was 2 cubits. Its horns were of it. Okay, it's the first time we've heard horns on here. Well, that I remember. Maybe they mentioned it when they were talking about the tabernacle chapters ago. And he overlaid it with pure gold, its top and its sides all around, and its horns. Yeah, it's got to be horns. They're just, the R and the N are just so close together. But I believe I'm making out a separation, but yeah, it's horns. Okay, anyway. And he made for it a wreath of gold all around. And he made for it 2 rings of gold from beneath its wreath on its 2 corners, on its two sides for housing for poles to lift it. And he made its poles acacia wood, and he overlaid them with gold. And he made the holy oil of anointing, and the pure incense of soothing fragrance, the work of a perfumer. All right, we're going to stop there. That's the end of chapter 37. I feel like I'm having a problem just looking at the words now. My brain's not flowing. I got too many things going on in my head right now. So one of them just being my daughter in the background. I need to go brush her teeth and probably get her a lollipop. I don't know. She's had breakfast, so let's clean her mouth out and prepare it for sugar. Anywho, we'll be back with chapter 38, 39, and 40. Hopefully they'll all be in the next little thing I do and or the next episode, and that'll finish off Exodus, and we can move into Leviticus, because I'm pretty excited to keep getting into these new chapters, and I'm really looking to get into the New Testament, because I think that's when the timeline or the story for the timeline that we're in, like the rules and whatnot, I think that's going to be closer to us, but we'll see, you know what I mean? Like I said, sometime around 1850, I don't know if that's when Satan was, you know, released from the lake of fire or wherever he was, you know what I mean? And he's now out here running around for his little season, but it would seem like it, because at that time we had some really crazy things happening, from world fairs to wars to orphan trains. Just it was a dramatic change in America and worldwide at that time. And it seems to reason that that's the time period that we're looking at. All these Roman, like the idea that Romans lived over in the, you know, the Eastern Hemisphere, and they somehow were building buildings over here. I live in Washington State. Go look up the Washington State Capitol. It looks like the White House. It actually looks nicer. It is insane. And when you go there, it's got a holier than thou feel. It's really hard to even get near. Like it's weird. It's very weird. But there's no damn way we built that building. And there's no way that we have that structure, structures identical to it in Asia, in England, South America, out on islands in the middle of the Pacific. It doesn't make any sense. Whatever that culture was, it was worldwide, and they've assigned it to the Romans, you know, as part of their cover-up of history. There's no way the Romans were on the entire earth, and there's no way the Romans built that. I mean, half of these structures are just, we couldn't do it today. They want you to believe that, you know, these people back in the day with horse and buggy were able to pull all this off. And it's crazy, you know, half the buildings we see just in America from the late 1800s that they claim they built or they did this, that they actually have like a picture of, if you look at the pictures of them, there's no roads leading to them. They'll just be this building in the middle of an area. You know what I mean? Like, how did you get the supplies in there? The first thing you build when you're going somewhere, anywhere, to build is a road. You bring a way to come in and out of it with the supplies you're going to need to build the structure. So a road is the first damn thing you're going to build. To have these buildings out in the middle of nowhere with like people around with horse and buggies and not one road? No. No. You're going to tell me everything was transported out here just from every odd angle and direction, and the wind just blew the tracks away, and we just, you know what I mean? Like, it doesn't make, unless they floated it there somehow, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make any sense at all. So, but then again, could they have floated it? If you're going to question that and think that's crazy, look up the Coral Castle. Go read about that guy, what he did. Go read about the box trucks he had come, you know, and pick up these incredible stones. How he would have the drivers just drop off the truck and leave and come back the next day and they'd be all loaded. This guy didn't have any help with them. He somehow was loading these megalithic blocks into these trucks. And that's the other thing. These blocks weren't out, you know, the weight of these blocks weren't overbearing these trucks. Like, they somehow remained a little lighter for transport, because there's no damn way you're going to fill the back of a U-Haul right now with one of those megalithic blocks, and it's not going to blow out the struts and the shocks on that thing. It's just not. These things weigh, you know, 20 tons, and you've got a 1-ton truck. It's just my 2-ton, you know what I mean? You're not putting a 10-ton block in that and driving around. You're not doing that. But somehow this guy, after having a problem with where he had originally built the Coral Castle, had to move it. And he did. So when you're thinking about, you know, it'd be impossible for them to be floating bricks in, so, or, you know, megalithic blocks or things of this nature, maybe we should all go study that guy a little harder. He's even got a book that's out that he wrote explaining a lot of it. I got it downloaded on my phone. I haven't gotten to it yet. It's an older book. My goal is to get a couple ink cartridges and actually print it out so I have like a hard copy, you know, before I get into trying to read any of it, because I hate reading on the phone with the, you know, the blue light and all that stuff going on. It just drives my, you know, anytime I'm reading or even staring at my phone for too long, I start seeing lines in it, and it my eyes start getting really irritated. So, yeah, anyway, we'll be back with chapter 38. Hope you all are having a great day. Stay away from the vaccines if you can, because your natural immunity that God gave you is 100 times better than anything science is ever going to produce for you. That's just a fact. Go with God, guys, and be at peace.